I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is local real estate developer and city planner Chris McGowan. Chris served as the director of urban development for the Greater Waco Chamber for 8.5 years before spinning off on his own. His consulting company recently inked an agreement with the city for a massive redevelopment of Heritage Square called the Civic Center, which I've mentioned on Downtown Depot a number of times. Chris is a recognizable face in the Waco scene, and his insights on where downtown has been and where it's headed are both prescient and powerful. But before we hear that conversation, it's the word on the street. Mike Copeland of the Waco Trib broke news last week that Half Price Books is coming back to Waco. The bookseller that operates 124 stores across 17 states plans to open an outlet at Waco Drive and Valley Mills Drive that will sell inventory from Half Price locations throughout Texas. Company spokesperson Emily Bruce described the outlet as, quote, a bare-bones location featuring books stacked on tables, end quote. They hope to have it open sometime in December and will transform it into a fully functional Half Price Books in the first quarter of 2018, at which point they'll begin buying back customers' inventory. The chain's exit from the Waco market in 1991 opened the door for other retailers. Just 2 years later, in 1993, Christina and Bill Morrow began serving local readers at their store, Brazos Books, located in the Town West Center on Valley Mills Drive next to Schmaltz's. Christina is apprehensive about the large chain's return to Waco.
My husband's reaction when we heard is concern, mainly because even though people say they want to be loyal to the mom-and-pop stores, that's what we're hoping, is that's what's going to save us, is that loyalty to the mom-and-pop stores. And so that's what we're going on, and we're planning on sticking it through and seeing what happens.
Supporting local business is more than just a mantra. In addition to keeping dreams alive for independent retailers like the Morrows, there is a major benefit for you and for our city as a whole when you bypass the big box. Listen to these numbers from the Greater Waco Chamber. On average, when you spend $100 at a local business, roughly $68 stays in your local economy. If you were to spend that same amount at a large business, say, ordering your cookie cake from Baskin Robbins rather than coming and finding me at Pocchio's, only 43 of those dollars stay in the local economy. So every time you choose a local business, you're also supporting better schools, cleaner streets, and more ambitious and varied programming in Waco. Christina hopes that the loyalty that Brazos Books has built over the past quarter century will help them fight what on paper seems like an uneven match against Goliath. But independent booksellers across the country have played the David role a lot in recent years, and they've proven their resiliency time and time again.
We survived when the internet came in. We survived the whole e-books and all of that. And that's what we're hoping, is that we have a majority of our customers, 90% plus, are regular customers that we see on a regular basis. And that is exactly, I mean, we will always have the better, lower price. It's just that the advertisement, we can't quite afford the advertisement that they can blanket the city with.
You can find Brazos Books at 1412 North Valley Mills Drive. They're open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturdays. Now in the Downtown Depot studio, I'm joined by Jake Barr. Jake plays bass for the local band The DiMaggios. You can see them perform tonight at True Love Bar, 414 Franklin Avenue at 10:30 p.m. Jake, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
The sound of the DiMaggios is post-punk, hardcore punk. For my Downtown Depot listeners, how would you make them understand what you guys are doing there on stage tonight?
So, yeah, it might be something that's a little unique to the, you know, local music scene here. We have a lot of country bands and other sorts of stuff like that, blues bands. But to describe it, if you've ever heard of a band called Weezer and then another band called Muse, they kind of rose to prominence in the early 2000s, Weezer a little bit earlier. We kind of sound like the singer from Muse playing over a Weezer in the background. That's kind of what it sounds like. We try to stick with that description to make it not complicated, but it was really accessible music. So
Well, there's a level of complexity in your songs that I wasn't expecting. When I was listening to it, I was kind of hearing the Mars Volta.
Interesting.
A ton of noise, and you can tell that, mm-hmm. I mean, at least you are classically trained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that comes into at least the way I play with the group is my experience at Baylor. I got 2 music degrees from there. And it really, I'm not much of a bass player. I actually did saxophone while I was at Baylor. But my education sort of guides how I write my own parts. I know at least what notes not to play.
How would you assess the music scene here in Waco as an artist?
As an artist, it's interesting because Waco's sort of it's got the Baylor part and it's got the Waco part. The Baylor scene is sort of self-contained. It's stuff that really only other Baylor students go out and see. And then, you know, for the jazz concerts, those are the major exception. We have a lot of people from the actual community that'll come out to see those concerts. But the actual Waco music scene, it's pretty young. There's a lot of really young people in it, and more of them are sort of enthusiasts, I would say, for music rather than participants in the scene. So it's small, but we're trying to grow it. We're trying to show people that, you know, there's lots of people out here that want to play music, and there's people that want to get together.
You can listen to the DiMaggio's online, thedimaggios.bandcamp.com, and you can see them tonight at True Love at 10:30 p.m. The doors are going to open before then, and it's 21 and up. But if you want to come get your face rocked off, True Love is the place to be.
Yep, definitely.
Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot, Jake. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Downtown Depot here on 103.3 KWBU-FM. My guest today is Chris McGowan. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
A man who doesn't need much introduction. We'll get into your credentials later, but I want to start out by asking how you ended up in Waco.
Yeah, I'll tell you that story, but before I get started on that, I want to talk about 2 things about you specifically, Austin.
Okay.
One, happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Chris.
And 2, I just wanted to tell you that I am so very proud of you and what you've done and what you're doing. It's exciting to have someone, you know, come to town. You've been here, what, 4 or 5 years now?
We moved here in January of 2015.
Yeah, so 2 years. And the way that you've kind of fit yourself in and doing great things to make Waco a better place, it makes me feel good.
Well, the listeners out there can't see me blushing. Chris, thank you. Very sweet, not planned. I'm going to shift the spotlight back to you, but I really appreciate those kind words. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Tell me a little bit about your history.
Yeah, so I moved to Waco in 2007. I'd actually been trying to get here for quite a bit longer than that. My wife grew up in Waco, and we had always envisioned that that one day we'd move to Waco and raise a family. In early 2006... we ended up buying a house here in Waco, and having 2 mortgages was a wonderful impetus for us to make that move.
And where were you?
We were in Houston.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In Houston, I was working at the Regional Council of Governments in economic development and land use and transportation planning. And to be honest with you, when we really started thinking about moving here, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do as an urban planner in Waco, Texas, because it was an entirely different place back then. I was fortunate to be able to go work at the Greater Waco Chamber of Commerce and start a program that was focused on, you know, engaging the community in a conversation about revitalizing downtown Waco.
So take me into that pitch meeting. You're the Houstonian who's coming here to Waco, and you're talking with the chamber and, you know, discussing downtown development and density and creating a strong urban core, a lot of, you know, tenets of new urbanism that maybe hadn't really been enacted here in Waco, although people were familiar with it. Were the people at the chamber hearing Chinese as you were speaking, or were they picking up what you were putting down?
It was actually a very serendipitous moment. I had been trying to find a job in Waco because we'd sold our house in Houston. And Christy was already here. She'd been here for about 3 or 4 months, and I just wouldn't have any luck. And what happened was one day I just shotgunned my resume out to pretty much every nonprofit organization in Waco and that dealt in or maybe dealt in some of the things that I knew about. And within an hour, I got an email back from a guy named Jim Vaughn, who ran the chamber at the time. And he said, hey, I think I'm looking for somebody like you. And I said, okay, let's meet. And so I went in and I met with Jim, and I expected to, you know, to have that conversation and him not to really, you know, understand. I thought I'd be coming in and educating him quite a bit, but he spoke the same language that I did. He was very much at the time interested in, you know, new urbanism and building momentum in downtown. And so it was just a great fit. And so we decided to give it a shot and see what would happen.
So when you began this process with the chamber, and what was the title exactly?
I think it was I was director of urban development.
Okay. And so what did that mean? What was an everyday experience in Chris McGowan's life in 2008, 2009?
Right. Yeah. So the very first thing that I did was try to outline that and develop a plan or a strategy for building momentum in the downtown area. So we developed what we called it our urban development plan. And there were three kind of primary tenets of what we wanted to do. One was work with, local stakeholders to create opportunities for development in the downtown area. The second was to work with the community to understand the tenets of what good urban design and urban planning strategies are. And then the third was, of course, it was a chamber of commerce. So, working to support business owners in the downtown area was the third thing that we focused on. So, you know, the first couple of months for me were just kind of navigating what's happening in downtown and what the potential is, and literally going out door to door to meet people that operated businesses. It was really interesting and I guess sort of funny. A couple of weeks on the job, I set out on foot. I was literally the only person walking around downtown at the time, and went door to door to meet everybody and say, you know, hey, I'm Chris McGowan. I work for the chamber, and we want to support you as you're down here in downtown. There weren't a lot of businesses downtown at that time.
It took you 25 minutes to do the whole circuit.
I was back
sure.
before lunch. there were literally, I think, three retail businesses on Austin Avenue at
the
time.
And so what was it at the time?
What were the businesses?
Yeah, what was there?
Oh, man, what was there? Let's see. You had Cameron Trading. There was another shop that dealt in those types of goods, and I can't remember what the name of it was. And then you had Schmaltz's, which I guess isn't on Austin Avenue, but close enough, and The Hub, which is a men's store where Stonehearth is now.
Okay. So staples like the Hippodrome and Dichotomy, they hadn't even been thought up yet, or they were still in the process of construction. The Hippodrome was going to be reopening.
The Hippodrome was open at the time as a nonprofit theater.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you think back to 2008, 2009 in Waco, the tenor has changed. The activity on the street has changed. To what do you attribute that? I mean, partially, I'm sure that the chamber and you were very faithful in pursuing those three goals, working with local stakeholders and the community and the different businesses. But is there anything else that you could point to?
Well, there were a lot of things happening at the same time. Number one, we had – so the chamber was building a new headquarters downtown. The city of Waco and the Public Improvement District were sort of reorganizing at that point. You had a business community really led by the chamber, I think, beginning to understand the value of having a vibrant and active core as being good for the whole community. And it was just this coming together of all of these different parties and stakeholders saying and recognizing, you know, there's a great opportunity here. I remember when I told my boss in Houston that I was moving to Waco and I was going to be doing downtown development. And he said, he's a longtime urban planner as well. And he said, why Waco? And I said, well, have you ever taken a look at it? I just kind of started studying it. And I found two things. One, the downtown area is a blank slate. There's a tremendous opportunity to do something interesting there. And there's not very many cities like that in the country. And the second thing was that it has a river that runs right through the middle of it. And I would wager that there aren't any other cities in the country with this kind of opportunity with a riverfront that needs to be activated. And just, you know, saw a chance to come in and be a part of something really interesting.
Those conversations that you were having with early downtown stakeholders about creating a walkable environment, having businesses that are looking over each other's shoulders and being in community and helping, these were tenants that traditionally were found in cities having a dense urban core, and we kind of got away from that in the middle part of the 1900s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of the conversations that happened early on were, I wouldn't say confrontational, but definitely there was a way that we've done things in the past here in Waco, and what I was advocating for was absolutely thinking about doing things in a different way. It took several years of engaging people and pulling people together in different formats through 1,000 Friends of Waco and chamber board meetings and working and speaking with merchants and business owners and things of that nature. And then showing them, at the same time as that all that was happening, there was, a movement towards the redevelopment and revitalization of what was called Waco Town Square at the time that ended up being Austin Avenue Flats, where Coaches is, and the Heritage Quarters and all that kind of stuff. So that really helped build momentum. Add to that the Chamber Building being the first real urban scale building built in downtown in probably several decades. Everything really came together at the same time.
You're listening to Downtown Depot here on KWBU-FM. My guest is Chris McGowan, urban planner and one of the developers of the Civic Center there at that little plot you were just talking about by Coaches and what became Austin Avenue Flats. Currently, it's a surface parking lot that gets used for events like Waco Wonderland and the Texas Food Truck Festival, but there certainly is a greater and a higher use for that, which is what your partner, Philip Williams, and you were trying to work on.
Sure. One of the things that that's always interested me, I talked about the blank slate. We did a plan in 2009 or 2010, the community here called Imagine Waco. And one of the things that we found was that in the Imagine Waco study area was that I think 25% of the land area was vacant or underutilized. There's a lot of opportunity. Heritage Square is an example of that. And part of my mission has always been about, trying to find best and highest use for some of these properties that we have in and around downtown Waco. Over the course of my work here in Waco, I guess, in the last couple of years, I came to meet a guy named Philip Williams, who's now my business partner in the Civic Center project. Philip's a longtime developer up out of Dallas, and he and I kind of had the same idea that there's a really interesting opportunity there. We knew that that there was probably demand and need for some high quality office space, and so we set out to put a concept together that would do that.
It's a unique proposal what you guys have come up with, building about 500,000 square feet of office space, if not more. And there's a real chicken and egg here. Do we build the beautiful Class A office space and then big people want to come and have offices here? Or do we need to be luring these companies to Waco first and then we can justify building all this out? How do you answer someone who would be hesitant or thinking that maybe this project is a little too ambitious?
Sure. I would, is it a chicken and an egg proposition? I would say it's probably both, to be honest with you. I mean, in my experience as an economic developer, we don't know what we're leaving off the table in terms of potential prospects to come to Waco, particularly on the professional services side, given the relative lack of high quality office space that we have in this community. So, which comes first? I don't know, but I know you can't bring new businesses to town if you don't have space to put them.
Where are you guys in the process of making the Civic Center a reality?
Sure. So over the last 6 months, we've submitted a proposal to the City of Waco through an RFP process, and they have selected us to move forward as their preferred developer, and we're in the process of negotiating a development agreement with the city right now.
And your role in that is what?
I'm the president of the Civic Center.
So day-to-day for you right now is meeting with other city leaders and negotiating incentives, or what's happening?
Day-to-day for me is really two things. Number one, working with the city as a partner to put together an agreement that will allow us to make the Civic Center a reality. And then the other side of that is coordinating and leading my team to get all the work done that we need to do to build it.
This mantra of shopping local, of connecting businesses in the downtown area and beyond, it goes beyond just the feel-good nature of knowing your neighbors and being a part of a team. There's an actual serious economic benefit for shopping locally. I caught up with Lexi Bishop, who's a research intern at the Greater Waco Chamber in their Economic Development Department. When you spend $100 at a local business, roughly 68 of those dollars stay in the local economy. If you were to go shop at a big box national retailer, only 43 of those dollars stay in the local economy. So we can see that shopping at local businesses, this idea of building a tight-knit community around people who go to the same places, you're rubbing shoulders with the fellow you got coffee with when you're there at the sandwich shop a few hours later, that creates a tangible benefit for Waco when we as consumers make those decisions to shop local.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better than that. Supporting local businesses is at the end of the day what it's all about for us. And, you know, I've often encouraged people to read, interesting and are interesting to me things about, you know, why downtowns are important and things of that nature. And they're all oriented towards the idea of connecting people and building place and making places that people want to be. And one of the really great things about what's happened in downtown Waco over the past several years has just been the notion of community just coming together out of a desire to have an interesting place, really. You know, I don't know exactly what it is, but, there's a definite vibe in downtown Waco right now that's oriented towards supporting each other, building on our successes, and hopefully looking towards the future, because in my opinion, you know, we've just scratched the surface of the opportunity here. You know, I think we've got a long ways to go.
I did a lot of research about one-way streets when a couple years ago there was a big city meeting about potentially changing Washington Avenue and Franklin to a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned is that one-way streets entered into city plans after World War II in response to the threat of having a nuclear bomb dropped on us. And that's the fastest way to get a lot of people out of a city.
Yeah.
Now, say what you will about Donald Trump and what's happening in our world today, but I don't feel that we're at imminent threat to have a nuke dropped on Waco. So a lot of these urban planning tactics that are not just in Waco but in cities all across the country aren't really applicable to this new mentality that we have of wanting close-knit community. And if you have shopping, for instance, it's a lot easier to have shopping on a street that has traffic that goes two ways and is slower, and people are stopping and getting out and parking. If it's a one-way street, people just scream down and they don't even see the businesses.
Yeah, and when we did all of that as sort of a country or as an ethos for, as it relates to city building, we were all about the automobile. We were all about getting people in and out and moving them around, and we just completely forgot about, understanding the value of people. I have a good friend who's also an urban planner, an urbanist up in Dallas, and he and I have been having a conversation for probably about 15 years now about how in our profession, why does it take so long? I mean, we're change agents, and why does it take so long to impact change and things of that nature? And we sort of settled on the answer to that a few years ago, and we've been working on ways to implement it. And the answer is we don't think about people. We don't think about people. I mean, I know what a sidewalk should look like, or how a building should orient, or where a park should go, or what a good parking lot looks like, or what all of that. But all of that is worthless if there's no one there, right? And I think that speaks to the same idea as the one-way streets. I mean, you think about Franklin Avenue right now. It's not a hospitable place for people. It's a great place if you're a car and you want to get into and out of downtown. Several years ago, I did a study just to as an exercise for myself to think about, you know, what Austin Avenue has done since it was kind of narrowed and the sidewalks were put in and it was turned into a people place versus what Franklin Avenue has done. And it was really interesting. If you take you know, a stretch of Franklin and Austin from about 5th Street to 11th Street, and you look at building density, property values, and safety, you know, car crash data, you'll see that building intensity on Austin Avenue is about 2/3 more than Franklin. You'll see that property values are about the same, 2/3 higher on Austin as they are on Franklin. This was a few years ago and things have changed, but I wouldn't say it has changed dramatically. And then I also learned that that stretch of Franklin Avenue was had one of the highest incidences of crashes per 100 vehicle miles travel as of any corridor in Waco. I think it was like number 4 or number 5. The interesting thing about that is that on a one-way street, you eliminate – this was part of the argument about one-way streets. On a one-way street, you eliminate about 2/3 of the conflict points because there are no left-hand turns, right? And so theoretically, a one-way street should be safer, but this one still had a pretty high incidence of accidents. So, you know, to me, that speaks to the inherent value of building places that are designed around people as opposed to designed around cars, because those are stark examples, right? Austin Avenue and Franklin, and what you've seen is Austin Avenue has been more successful.
There's been a lot of buzz about the East Side and the redevelopment of Elm Avenue, which at one time was a bustling commercial district and fell into disarray. What is the connection between what's happening on the downtown side of the river and what's happening over on the east side of the river?
Well, I mean, I think Elm Avenue in particular has such great bones and really good old buildings that and the scale is really good for people, right? It's only a matter of time before Elm Avenue takes off, and I know there's a lot going on over there right now. In terms of the connection, I think that's a bit of a challenge. Physically, it's disconnected by a river and a couple of major thoroughfares with MLK and University Parks to a lesser extent. Add into that the fact that there's a big institutional complex separating downtown and East Waco with the convention center and City Hall and hotel and all that kind of stuff. I would love to see a better connection between Austin Avenue and Elm Avenue that's designed at a human scale. I'm not smart enough to know how you do that, but I think it would benefit our community greatly if we took a hard look at it. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, there's just so much opportunity in downtown on both sides of the river. Property values have gone up significantly in the past couple of years due to, you know, perhaps the Magnolia effect. And then again, there's been a lot of new development come in. But, you know, I would probably still make the argument that we're at that blank slate stage, just given the fact that there's so much developable land in the area. What can we support that many new businesses or residential units or office buildings or what have you? You know, that remains to be seen. I think there are a lot of smart people out there in the real estate development community that see the opportunity and are taking advantage of it right now. And our best days in downtown Waco are definitely in front of us.
Chris McGowan, local developer, city planner, doing his best to make that blank slate of downtown Waco a little bit more full. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
I really appreciate you having me, Austin.
Tune in to KWBU on Friday, December 1st for the next episode of Downtown Depot, and be sure you're following Waco Business News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to stay up to date with what's happening in your city in between shows. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.